My name is Mats Christensen, and I'm here to show you some things about productivity in web development using Visual Studio. And so my job is to build sort of the Visual Studio tooling for web developers, HTML, CSS, parts of the JavaScript experience, and so on. And I write a lot of extensions as well. And we're going to take a look at like what are the tooling available out there. Some of it is built into Visual Studio. Some of it comes in through extensions. And there's a lot of productivity gains by knowing what tools to use and when to use them. And so there's going to be a little bit of tips and tricks sort of feeling to this, but it is about productivity, right? And so we're going to take a look at some of the more complex things of web development. I don't know if you've noticed this, but it seems like in the last 5 years or so, web development has gotten more and more complex, whereas sort of other development paradigms have gotten simpler. Like it's easier to build a phone app now than it was a long time ago. But for some reason, it seems that web development is more difficult. I think we're now at a point, a tipping point, where we can see the light and, you know, we can break the trend line and we can make things simpler. And that's sort of what my job is at Microsoft. It is to make complex things easy and easy things automated. And we're going to look at how we have the tooling that kind of fits that philosophy that will help us be more productive. I will leave a few minutes at the end, hopefully, for questions. And here's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about how we can do bundling and compiling, look at task runners, browser link, working with images, and package management. All are things that at some point we need in one or more of our web apps. And there's no particular order to this. We're going to mix and match all this stuff. And there's a few bonus things. If there's any time left, I have a few bonus demos to show you. Everything I'm going to show you is available for you to use today. There's nothing that sort of internal demos or prototypes or anything like that. Everything I'm going to show you, you can go home and use today. I will be using Visual Studio 2015 and a single extension called the Web Extension Pack. Okay, I'll be showing this URL again at the end, but this is a really good one to take a picture of or remember. And what this one does, this extension for Visual Studio, is that it installs all the cool features, all the extensions that are going to help us being productive with web development. Okay? So it's sort of a meta extension. It doesn't do anything by itself. It just installs all the things we need. So these are the two only things you need, Visual Studio 2015 and Web Extension Pack. All right. Demo time. So I will start by creating a new project. And I'm going to start with a new template that I've been playing with for ASP.NET Core. But for what I'm going to show you, everything that I'm going to show you is also going to apply to web forms and MVC and everything else. Okay. So let's call it Ignite 2016. And let's see what we get here. Here's the project. We see we get the home controller showing up here, actually explaining what a controller is. So if we're new to MVC, we can quickly learn. So that's kind of nice. Let's just close this down and take a look at what the folder structure looks like. We have the model, the views, and the controllers folders. Controllers has one file. Models have one. And then we have various views. Okay, so these are razor files, CSS, HTML. And then we have this concept of dot root, which is sort of unique to ASP.NET Core. But don't get too hung up in this. Regardless of whether or not you use ASP.NET Core, what I'm going to show you will work anywhere, okay, in Visual Studio. So one JavaScript file, one CSS file. That's what we got. So let's just run this app. That was weird. There we go. Okay. So we get a very simple web page here. So I find that the current templates have a little bit too much stuff in them. Like they have jQuery, Bootstrap, they have some sort of bundler like Gulp or various NuGet packages that, you know, sometimes you end up deleting to customize your own stuff. So this is like sort of a little bit more bare bone. But we still get this nice website right here that's responsive. You see here, it snaps right there. So that's kind of nice. Gives us a good starting point. So first of all, now I'm starting to build my app. And I see the title here says Ignite 2016. That's not exactly the title I want to use. I need a space in there. So I want to add a space there. And we have one here down at the footer as well. Gonna do that. And then I'm just gonna save the file here. Let's see. We're not connected. So something is wrong here with the internet, I think. Very strange. Hang on. Starting out strong here with the very first demo failing. This is absolutely fantastic. This is what happens when you prepare a whole week. So let's run this again. So now it looks like it's actually loading and booting up the app. I think maybe we were hitting the cache, the browser cache before. So let's try this. All right. So let's just change the title a little bit more. Ignite 2016 rocks. Okay. And I save the page. And notice what happens in the browser. I just saved the page. And the browser just reloaded. You saw how fast that was. No longer do I need the Alt tab and then F5. It just happened for me automatically. So that's very nice. And that happens for every file that I save. If it's a JavaScript file or CSS file or whatever, the browser just reloads. You can turn it on and off, you know, depending on your mood. But it's very nice to have as a nice productivity thing. And this comes in through the web extension pack that you get that feature. So let's take a look at, let's see here, the About page. So the About page just basically enumerates through my employee model here and displays a few names, and that's more or less it. So let's add some code to this. So let's do an input field here. Say this is a text field, and let's name is fine. And let's just give it a bigger font size, like 2em here. And again, I just save it and it just shows up, okay? So in order to show you this, what I'm about to show you, I need to have a vertical scroll bar. I need to have a long document. So I'm gonna insert 25 BR tags. And I'm gonna do that like this. BR times 25. And I'm gonna hit tab. Yeah. Okay. So that was kind of nice. Let's look in Chrome here. Let's load the page up here. Now we have the exact same page. And I will navigate to the home page in Chrome. Chrome is now my active window. I'm going to hit Control Alt Enter. And all my other browsers are going to navigate to the same location, okay, the same URL. Let's go to the About page here and scroll down. So now I'm in the right side, now I'm in Edge. I'm gonna hit Control Alt Enter. We move the other page, move to the About page. I'm gonna do it again, and it scrolls to the same scroll position as my active browser. All right, so this makes it really, really easy when you're doing your browser testing to make sure your CSS and whatnot looks correct in all browsers. And for those of you who saw Hanselman's talk the other day, you probably also saw that if I type in one text field, it types in the other ones, right? Woo. Yeah, this is really, really cool. And the way that it works, because it doesn't just work every time, but because we need to know what is the input field that I'm typing in, okay? In order for this feature to know that, we need to give the input element right here a name or an ID. Either one of them will then, if either one of them is there, then this feature will work. If none of them are there, it will not, because then we can't identify what field it is in all cases, right? There are cases where we would be able to, but there are cases where we don't. So this is the rule. So this all comes in through BrowserLink that was introduced in Visual Studio 2013, which is fully extendable, which is what the web extension pack utilizes and gives us some nice additional features. So let's move on. Let's look at some CSS. So this is the CSS file. So this is the only CSS for the entire page, which I think is kind of cool, right? Instead of having like Bootstrap and all that, which is fine. By all means, use Bootstrap if you want to, but from a starting point, we get a long way here with very little CSS. I really want to use less instead of CSS. So less is this preprocessor technology that's a superset of CSS that gives us extra capabilities in CSS, right? The browsers don't understand what that is, so we need to compile our less files into CSS files. Now, less is one technology. There's also SAS. There's also Stylus. And I'm sure there are other ones out there, okay? But I'm going to choose one of them, and I choose less. So the good thing about less is that any valid CSS is valid less. So in order for me to convert my CSS to less, all I have to do is change the file name. And now I have a less file. It looks like this. Okay. So let's start taking advantage of some of this stuff that we get with less. And one of them is that we can use variables. So I can take this color here from the background color from the header selector or the rule. And you see here how we get a nice little smart tag here. So extract all to variable. So all instances of this specific color in my style sheet will now be moved in. Let's call it the header color. It's now moved into a variable. Okay, so I can just reference that throughout my file. So that's kind of nice. But what I really want, I want to move that into a separate file. So all my variables go into a separate file. Maybe my theme, so I can very easily just change my theme, and it sort of is just applied everywhere that the different variables are used. So I'm just going to create a new file, Shift F2. Okay, that pops up this little thing that also comes with web extension pack. It knows that I'm on site.less, so it knows that when I want a new file, it's probably in the same folder as what's currently the active document. Or if I'd made a selection in Solution Explorer, then Solution Explorer would be active, and that would determine what folder the file would go into. So variables.less, and then I can simply just go in here. Let's just lift out this thing, and then I just need to reference it. So the way I do that is drag and drop. That's one way of doing it. Okay, so now you can see here how that works. I can even hover over this, and Visual Studio knows, the less editor in Visual Studio knows where this variable comes from, what value it has, okay? So there is native Visual Studio support for this. But now I have to turn it into CSS, okay? Because the browser does not understand what I just did. This is a less specific thing, not a CSS thing. So there are many, many, many ways to compile less, right? If you read a lot of blogs and Hacker News and whatnot, you might be thinking, I should use Gulp or Grunt or Webpack or Rollup or whatever the next thing is that's not out yet. Or we just right-click our site CSS and say compile file. Okay, site CSS is right there. Let's just refresh the browser here. See, everything is the same now. I now have site.css again, and everything looks exactly the same in the browser. But of course, I can go in here and change the color to, I don't know, dark gray. That That's not a good idea. Navy. All right, here we go. And I just saved the file, you know? I just saved the file. I didn't update the browser, so that's kind of nice. And so now I get this sort of fidelity. That's really, really cool. And a very nice workflow here, where I don't need to introduce a lot of tools like Gulp or Webpack or whatnot, Node.js, if I don't want to. If I just have a sort of a simple app where I'm just going to compile less files, for instance, there is really no need to go with a tool chain that I might not be familiar with or comfortable with. If you are, then by all means, go ahead and use Gulp and Webpack, of course. And here's what drives it. Compiler config.json. This is the most complicated file we have for this sort of stuff. Contains an input and an output. Okay? That means that the input could be any less file, and the output could be any path to where I want this to go. So I can output to a different folder if I want. I can just type in what my output file name should be, and that's it. And I can even go in here, and it has a little nested file here saying, what are the defaults? So if you look at less, you can see here it has some default things I can set. I can overwrite them in the file we just looked at for each of the file I'm compiling, but here's just what are the defaults for my entire project? Well, and it could be, let's just look at this site CSS. This is what it looks like when we're compiling it. We even get this nice little generated watermark down there just so we know that, oh, this is a generated file, so if I you know, type in it, it'll be overwritten. So it's sort of a reminder, don't type in this file. This is not the source of truth. So I can go in here, and let's actually just add something. I'm going back to my less file. Let's add something that's CSS3. Animation alternate, okay? So now we have that right here. So my compiler config, I can say I want to use auto prefixing. Auto prefixing is the concept of, for CSS, where we have all these vendor-specific prefixing, right? Where we do like dash moz dash animation, dash webkit dash animation. Instead of me having to remember and do that on my own, I can just go in here and say, give me all the prefixes for any browser that has more than 0% usage. And it knows that because caniuse.com is what feeds into it. So it's fairly accurate. So basically what this says is, give me all vendor specifics for any browser that's not dead, okay? Any browser version that's not dead. I just saved that defaults file, and boom, here we have the vendor specifics. I don't have to remember that anymore. I can also go in here and say, what about the CSS comb? CSS comb is a way for us to arrange our CSS properties in an order that makes them better for gzip compression, but also like just unifies the order of how we're dealing with properties. So let's pick a setting called sen. And what happens is that we always have padding after margin, and it basically changes the order of the properties. And so that's really good for gzipping, actually. So I did some tests. That gives us an additional around 3 to 5% harder gzipping because we have more strings that are continuous, so that will gzip even more. And of course, with all this, we get the min file, right? So we do have a minified version that we will use in production. So that's right here. And all of this without using any additional tools other than what Visual Studio gives us with the extensions that I have installed. So this is really easy. This is taking something that's a little bit complex, maybe, and making it really, really simple. And as soon as I change one of the source files, you saw I was changing the site.less, it will just automatically generate a new CSS file. Okay? And it's fast. It's really, really fast. So let's leave CSS just for a little bit and look at an image. So let me just move some images in here. I'll put them in here. So now we have 1 through 2, 3 images, okay? And so here's some fire, and I call it ignite. I want that to be part of the bottom page over here. It's here, like right here. I want that little icon to be down here. So what I can do is that I can go in here, say, okay, right here, I'm gonna just drag in this ignite image. and save the file, and now we see that we have that logo. But I also want one of the other icons to be up here with employees. I have a user icon right here. Oh, that's very appropriate that I put that up here next to employees, right? So now I have two images. And so that, you know, that's a request for each image. So the first thing I'm considering here is like performance. The very, very first thing I want to do when I'm working with images is to make sure that they are as optimized as possible, right? And I'm not talking about file size, like dimensions, height and width. I'm talking about that we optimize the PNG headers and get rid of EXIF data and all that sort of stuff, rearrange the palette to be as much as optimal as possible so we get the smallest file size possible without compromising quality. So you can use tools like Kraken.io or tinypng.com where you upload your images and they give you like a zip file back and you paste them in to your project, replace your images with those. Or you can just right click, let's say, images here, go to Image Optimizer and say Optimize Images, right? Or do it on the folder. Optimize Images. Do you want to do it lossless or do you want to do it lossy? Lossless means there is no change in quality, but we're going to optimize the image. We're going to make it smaller in size, file size. Or we can say lossy, which gives us more compression. We can do even more, but there is a little bit of a quality loss there. But it's very, very, there's very little loss. And chances are you're not going to be able to see the difference. Like the human eye will likely not going to see the difference. So I'm just going to choose that. Lossy optimized images. As he's already done, in 55 seconds, I just shaved 45% off the size of my images. And if we look at the output, we can see here what happened. Okay? We lost a lot of weight here. These are very small icons, so they were already just bytes, not even kilobytes. But you can imagine, like, if you have more images. Around 77% of the size of an average website is images. So this is, like, really, really important. And now it's very, very simple to optimize images. But we want to further optimize because, as I said, we have two requests, right? There are two images that I want to insert into my document. So instead of having two separate images, what I really want to do is that I want to have a single image that contains both of the source images. And then that's called image spriting. And then I want to use CSS to kind of do some tricks with background positioning so that we get the exact same effect as if we were just inserting the image tag itself like I was just doing here, but we do a trick with CSS, or in our case, less. So let's get rid of this thing again. Now, how do we create sprites? We could ask our designer to, instead of giving us three source images, to give us an image sprite, right? But that might be a little cumbersome because new images are needed all the time, maybe, or you know, you want to make modifications to individual images, and then you need to generate a brand new image sprite every time. So what if we can just say, I want that image and that image. I want to create an image sprite, okay? And I'm just going to call it icons, because that's sort of what it is. And here's what we get. We get a sprite file. That's a JSON file that looks like this. And you can kind of see what it does. It's pretty self-explanatory. You can set various properties here. Of course, you get IntelliSense for all this, and I'll show you that. But notice here, you have your PNG file, and we now see that we have one file that contains both of those images, okay? And then we get a CSS file that looks like this. So now I can include this CSS file on my page and simply just reference the right class names, add the right class names to my markup, and things will just work magically. But since we're using less, let's get rid of the CSS file. So in here, where it says CSS, I can output any format almost that I want, less, sass, or stylus. So I'm going to go with less. I'm just going to save this file. Right, and now we have a less file. And it looks like this. So this is less mixins. So we just saw what less variables were. This is a mixin. This is a reusable sort of chunk of CSS that can be reused. So for me to get the exact same effect, I'm going to just for the sake of this, let's get rid of that so we can see everything. I'm going to go into my layout file here, and I'm going to add iClass logo. All right, so I'm basically just going to add the shortest tag I can find. So an I tag is like, that's fine, right? And give it a class name logo. And then in my CSS, I can say here, footer, let's get this up, footer, and then there's a logo element in there, dot, oh, I forgot one very important thing. I need to import it. Okay. So of course you get like nice IntelliSense for this. All right, here we go. So now you get that. Here we go. Dot, right? And it gives me the IntelliSense saying, okay, I want the Ignite icon right here. I'm gonna do that. Oh, and just save the file. And now we have the Ignite icon down here, okay? I'm gonna do the same in here. So that's employees. I'm going to go into site. Let's put it here. So main h2i, for instance, right? So any I element inside h2 inside my main container element, I'm going to give it the user icon. And here we go. It just shows up in the browser as I save the file. So this has never been easier to work with sprite images than what I'm showing you right here. So this is a great way to reduce your bandwidth and reduce HTTP requests. And why do I say bandwidth? Well, first of all, we just optimize the source images themselves, right? But what happens as well, and let's just delete this PNG file right here. This is the sprite PNG file. So I can just right click here and say update image sprite. And then we can see what happened down here. We can see here, we just optimized the output. It automatically optimized the sprite PNG file that it just generated using the exact same compression algorithms as I was just demonstrating. So the output here is as optimized as it can possibly be. And we can say, do we want to do this lossless or lossy, right? So there was a setting for that. So we are in complete control if we want lossy or lossless compression, okay? That's all in here. Yeah, this is good? You're very quiet. Thank you. So this is sort of falls in the category of things that are very complex that we want to make easy, right? And so that's my goal here, a lot of these things. Network. I need network. What happened? Did it fall out? All right, I'm gonna try some new network here. Okay, so that was some images and some less tricks. Let's take a look at JavaScript. So here I have a very exciting JavaScript file. It's very empty. And I'm gonna create a new JavaScript file. Let's call it foo.js, whatever. And so here's foo.js. It gets created just right next to it. Again, Shift F2, right? Once you get used to using the Shift F2 to add files, you cannot live without it. And so that's a very, very simple way of adding files here. I'm gonna do something. I'm gonna say var msg equals ignite, just ignite, like that, okay? So now this global variable that I just created in one file, I wanna consume in my other file, site.css. Okay. So I want to just write it to the console for, you know, whatever reason. So MSG, let's get up IntelliSense here. Whoop. There is no MSG. It does not exist. Okay. I get zero IntelliSense for this. So that's not the best experience. So let's just drag foo in here. So now I create a reference to foo, and now let's check it again. Now I get MSG, okay? So not only do we get like IntelliSense for this by adding that triple slash reference at the top there, But it also makes it really easy for me to see what are the dependencies of this particular file against other source files, right? It's kind of a nice little trick. But it doesn't really tell me much about what MSG is. It just says it's a global variable, right? Is it a string? I don't know. Like, what is it used for? No idea. This does not help me, right? So we can do a few things. So we can go back here to foo, and we can do something like this and say, a message for the console. This is the purpose of this variable. And so now, that just shows up right here. I don't know if you knew this. This is built into Visual Studio 2015. Just add a comment, and it will flow through to IntelliSense just like this. I still don't know, though, is this a string? I don't know. How would I know? Okay. Does that work in TypeScript too? It might, yeah. I think it does. But maybe not that what I'm about to show you, I think, will work in TypeScript. I'm not sure that where you just have a simple comment will carry through to IntelliSense, but this will. So let's say that I want to specify what is the type of this variable so that the rest of my team knows when they consume my JavaScript file that they know sort of what are the different things in the file. What if I could do something like this? Okay, this is JavaScript doc comments, okay? JS doc comments. This is a specific syntax that you'll see in most libraries out there that are being used. This is sort of the industry standard syntax for describing what functions and variables are, okay? And we can do something like this, being very descriptive, saying, okay, I want to show this as a description, okay? Add description. And so now, let me see here, we get the exact same thing. We just have the description. But I can add more to it. I can add type. So the type of this is string, okay? So now, it does in fact say string. I have now helped the rest of my team use my JavaScript code, okay? So this is also, I think some of this is already in, I think the regular comment might actually be in Visual Studio 2013, but this js.comment syntax is 2015. So that's really, really nice. And we get the IntelliSense and the auto-completion for all of this with the web extension pack, okay? All right. So now I have two JavaScript files, but I just want a single one. I want to bundle it into a single JavaScript file. And again, just like we compile less, I could go the way of doing it with Gulp, Webpack, all these Node.js tools. Or I could right-click these two files, the two JavaScript files, and say bundle and minify files. Okay? It's going to ask me, what do you want to call the output file? I'm going to call it all.js, because why not? So now we have all.js, and we have all.js, or all.min.js. Let's look at all.js. Again, we get a nice generated watermark here to remind us that I need to save my site.js, first of all. And look, it's already here. I just saved the source file, and boom, this was updated, right? Really, really, really quickly. So that's nice. So now, in order for me to use this, I will just move into the layout file here. Instead of site.js, I'm going to do all.js. Okay, let's open the console. We may have to refresh the browser here. Okay, it says ignite, okay? In the console, it says ignite. So let's just, for the sake of the argument, go in here and change this to ignite 2016 and then save it, okay? And the page already reloaded and updated the console here. So again, this is like a really, really, really simple workflow that I can do to achieve bundling and minification of JavaScript. This works for CSS files as well, and actually HTML files. So if you have like a templating engine that uses HTML and you want to bundle all your HTML fragments up into a single output, that will work as well. And in order for this to work, it created this bundle config.json file. Okay, and it's sort of exactly the same as the compiler config.json, except here we can have multiple inputs, okay? So we have two input files and we have one output. And again, you can place the output file exactly where you want relative to this JSON file, the bundle config.json. And we have properties, we have options we can set. Right, so we can say, what are the minify options that are available to us? And we can see here, we really have a lot of things we can do. We can even generate a gzip file if we want to move this out to a CDN and serve that statically for some from some CDN, for instance. Right? There's a lot of cool things there. So bundling is easy. Compiling is easy. And we even, for the compiler, we even did some pretty advanced things. Right? We did the auto prefixing, we did the comb where we were organizing our properties in a certain order. So that's pretty advanced, but obviously there are things out there that are you potentially want to use that this does not support. It could be your own custom things, it could be something else that the rest of the web community uses and maybe recommends. Whatever that might be, you might find a limit at some point when you're using these tools that I just showed you, right? Because they support what they support and nothing more. They're not sort of extendable. So if you really want to, let's say you want to grow up into a Node.js-based tool chain, which is required to run a lot of these advanced scenarios you may want to do at some point, then we have to install Node.js, NPM, install the various node modules, set up a gulp file, for instance, and learn about all this sort of stuff. Right? And for a lot of people, that's a lot of new stuff that they're not interested in. I get it. I totally get it. Right? That's why I found that this was a good idea, because this is sort of the simpler way where we don't need all the Node.js-based tools. But at some point, you might want to do that, though. And so how can we make that as easy as possible to maybe start here and then grow into using, let's say, Gulp. So let's just go down here. Let's just close all documents. Why not? I'm going to right-click my bundle config.json. I'm going to say convert to Gulp. Okay. It says something. Do you want to continue? Okay. It says that this is not irreversible, right? Whatever is going to happen now, you can just get rid of, and nothing harmful will happen. That's basically what that said. But let's take a look what happens down here. Installing Gulp, it says. Okay, so something is going on. If we look at the output window, we can see here that it just installed something else. It's working with NPM right now to install node modules into my project. Oh my. And if we take a look at that, you'll notice that here I don't actually see the node modules folder. All right. We don't show it in Solution Explorer. But we can go in here and say open in Windows Explorer. And there you have your node modules folder. And we have 210 folders right now and counting. We're still installing. Right. So this is a lot of stuff to put in your project, and also a reason why some people just really don't like this. And I get it, but to some people, this is fine, right? And it gives us a little bit more stuff. It gives us a gulp file.js. Let's open it. Now let's see what happens. Get a nice logo for one. That's like pretty awesome. This is gulp, obviously, because it has a logo. If you don't like it, just click it. It goes away. If you want it back, just hover the area, click again. It stays. Yeah. It's all about the details. You know? So here we have Gulp, right? It's JavaScript. It's just JavaScript. Now, you will notice, by the way, that I have Gulp. I'm installing node modules, which is now done, it looks like. I don't have Node.js installed on my machine. I don't have NPM installed on my machine. Yet this works. Why is that? It's because Visual Studio ships with both Node.js and NPM in the box. If you just have the web tooling installed, which you all do, I assume, since you're here, You have these things. They live somewhere within the Visual Studio install directory. Okay. So you don't need to go out and install Node.js. It's there already when you use Visual Studio. Okay. So here's what happens. We're requiring, this is the same as in C#, you're doing using statements. I'm now using gulp and gulp concat and CSS min, HTML min, and so on. Okay. But then it is using my bundle config.json. Okay. So something is interesting here. If we look at actually one little detail, a file was created that wasn't there before that says that the bundler, the Visual Studio tooling for the bundler, should no longer produce output. Okay? It is now paused. It is no longer running, listening for file changes and automatically bundling. We said, okay, don't, I'm going to opt out of that because I'm going to let gulp do that for me. So Minify.js right here. We say, okay, give me all the bundles that have anything with .js in it. Right? It looks for this, basically it looks for this. This ends in .js. So give me all of the .js bundles, loop through them all, concatenate them, bundle them into one file, basically, minify them, and then spit them back out with the same file name. Right, or with the, yeah, with the output file name here. So now, let's open this up. Gonna refresh here. I got a lot of task runners. This is the Task Runner Explorer. Okay. Visual Studio ships by support for gulp and grunt out of the box. You can install, I think, around 10 additional task runners out there, right? So I have a few of them. So the compiler and the bundler that I showed you actually integrates with the Task Runner Explorer. But I can have package.json, which is the NPM scripts exist. There's Webpack, there's Rollup, there's Brunch, there's Broccoli, there's Cake or CMake or whatever. And so you can imagine there's a lot of these different tools, right? A new one comes along all the time. But it's good to know that Visual Studio got you covered regardless of what you choose. So here's my task. This is my gulp task. We have a min.js, it's called. So I can go down here. Let's just remove this one called all.js, okay? And now I'm gonna execute min.js. I'm clicking it, and 84 milliseconds later, all.js is back. And it's now, because we ran the concatenation, right? Uclify, that's the minifier. We see that the output is minified. So now gulp runs everything, right? I didn't go to the console once. I didn't do anything. I set up in my entire bundling infrastructure by right-clicking in Visual Studio and adding files by adding them to the bundler config. And I don't lose that. So if I have another file or an additional file that I want to add to my bundle, I can simply just go into my bundle config.json, add another file in this array, and gulp will automatically then include it, right? So I get all my right-click actions and all the tooling for doing this. I use gulp and Node.js in the background, but I don't really care that I do. But now I can start working with node modules that I couldn't do before. So I can start playing around with like more advanced scenarios. And one thing I can do now that I have gulp here is I can use it to compile my less file. So instead of using the compiler I did before, I can now do that. I compile my site.less here. I can do that with gulp. So let's just install gulp-less. So I'm going to open a little quick install window here. Shift-Alt-0. You get that with Web Extension Pack. It's sort of a shortcut to package managers, okay? Here's what supported. It's quite nice. So I say I want to install an NPM package. I want to install gulp-less. Here we go. Okay. It knows what the latest version is. Just going to say install. Okay. So now it's installing down here. At the bottom, we can see that it's running. All right. So now I'm going to get my gulp.less file. And so I can require it. So let me just go up here and say less equals require gulp-less. and then we can create a less task. So I have snippets, boom, like that. And let's just call this task less. Let's create a, let's zoom in here a little bit. Let's create a, so called source. I want all the, you know, .root/css, site.less, that's the file I want to compile. Okay. So I want to run that through the less compiler. That's the one I just required right there. Just going to call it as a function. And then I'm going to pipe it. Actually, I'm just going to say gulp dest. I'm going to pipe it out to the same folder like that. Okay? So it will automatically just get the name that the input file had, but .css, if I do it this way. So I can save that. So as you noticed, I don't have the CSS file up here. I just saved the gulp file. And now we have less right here. Okay, 12 milliseconds later. And we have site.css. Okay. It's not minified, but hey, wait a minute. I already had the minifier, right? So I can simply just pipe CSS min into it like this, run it again, and now we're minified. Okay? So I can pipe the different things that I want from Node.js just like that, just one after each other in the order that I want it. And so now I have access to the entire Node.js ecosystem. And again, not once did I touch the console or install Node.js. It just happens automatically with full Visual Studio integration. But there's more to it, because does that mean that every time I change a file, I have to then go and manually run things in the task runner explorer window that shows up right here? No, because there's something here called watch. There's a watch task, okay? So the watch task, in this case, looks for JavaScript, CSS, and .html file changes. And whenever one of them changes, it automatically just starts the compiler, right? It just does it automatically. So I want to run the watch task when I open the project. And so to do that, I'll just go in here and right-click. I say bind the watch task to project open. Okay? And then in the top here, this is all there is to it. Right, so every editor in the world are going to ignore that comment except for Visual Studio. It knows what this means. It knows that when I close this project and I start it again, then the watch task will run. So now it's running. And we can see here, this is my task. It has the name or the word running right here. So it's now running forever, sort of. And whenever I make a change, let's say, you know, something like this. We can see here that it started running again. So it did produce the output. Let's see here. See? So we get the same, the exact same sort of development workflow that we had before, but now we're just running Node. We feel cool. We feel like we're doing the right thing. We're doing what Hacker News tells us to do. You know, it's awesome. So that's kind of nice. Okay, so that means that I can now get rid of my compiler config, by the way, so let's just get rid of that. Okay. So now we're running everything off of the gulp file. And you know, eventually, if I don't want to have the Visual Studio integration where I have my right-click menus and all that to create bundles, I can also just get rid of my bundle config if I just make sure that I specify the paths somewhere else, right, in this file, for instance. So that's kind of nice. It's a very smooth transition. Okay. So you saw how I just installed gulp, right? Control, no, what was it? Shift, Alt, Zero brought up that little quick install package that lets me install things from all the different package managers. Now that's really nice. And let's install something interesting. Let's just get rid of the, let's install jQuery. I want to use jQuery in this project. How are we going to do that? Well, I'm in a ASP.NET core application. That means that NuGet cannot give me content packages anymore. Right? We cannot use NuGet to give us jQuery or Bootstrap or something like that. We can only get like DLLs, basically. Okay? That means that we have a few extra package managers that we can use. We can use Bower, or we can use NPM. both of those tools are running on Node. And that's fine. A lot of people do this. It's absolutely fine. Okay. Now, I want to keep things simple. I want to be in control of my folder structure. Okay. I want to have jQuery.min.js inside my JS folder. And nothing else. Okay. I don't want any other files. I don't need the source map file. I don't need the unminified file. I'm not going to debug jQuery. Right? Chances are, if something is failing, it's not jQuery's fault. It's probably my own. Okay? So I just want the min file. Okay? Let's see if we can do that. So let's pop this up. Let's install jQuery. That's apparently the latest version. I'm going to install it. And let's take a look here. jQuery. Okay, so jQuery min.js is the file I need, right? Okay, where is it? It's not right here. Is it in here? Oh, no. I don't know where it is. There's a lot of files here, actually. What's up with that? Yeah. You're ruining the surprise. So here's what we get. We get 118 files, right? And 1.18 megabytes. And I just wanted jQuery min.js, okay? Also, I didn't get it in my JS folder as I wanted to, because it sort of has to be in node underscore modules. So that's kind of frustrating. Yes, it's under dist. It's in here. So that's where the file is, okay? But I needed to get, I need to basically clone a Git repo. That's what happens under the covers, sort of. And so I get a lot of files here. And that's annoying. Okay, NPM, you failed miserably. You gave me the file, but now I have to move that file into the right place. So now I need to use gulp to move the file. What's up with that? So let's do something else. Let's use Bower. And here's a tip. If you're using this tool, you don't need to like change it over here. If you just start writing Bower, like BO, for instance, and then colon, it just switches to Bower. So let's use Bower to install. We don't want to wait for the latest. We just do this. It gives us a Bower file. Okay. And it's running. And here we go. Now we have Bower components. Yay. But guess what? It's the exact same 118 files we get for jQuery, regardless of we use NPM or Bower. Okay. Now let's get rid of this folder. Because Bower does give me a little extra. I can determine what folder the Bower stuff goes under. So I'm going to go in here. I'm going to create .bowerrc file. And so that just automatically nests in here. And already comes pre-populated with this. Okay, so this is just a coincidence. If you have another folder structure, it probably doesn't fit unless you have a .bowerrc root. But I'm going to tell it, put everything into a lib folder. So that doesn't exist. Let's just save this. We can right-click bower.json, say restore packages. Okay. So now it's running. And here we go. Now we have lib. So this is pretty good, except I don't get jQuery to be in the root of my lib folder here. It's still somewhere in here. It's better. Where is it? There we go. It's better. It's not good. Okay. So it seems like the only option I have is to go to jQuery.com and click the download link, which gives me a zip file, right? Take out the jQuery min.js and put it in my project. And there's absolutely nothing wrong in doing that. But that's really cumbersome. I know the URL to jQuery. jQuery.com. I don't know what the URL is to all the other libraries that I might need, right? So this is not the best solution. It'll work though. So let's get rid of Bower. Obviously, it failed as well. Okay. What if there was a way that I could get exactly what I want? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that just be nice? So here's the thinking. There are CDNs out there in the world that people use to serve up commonly used libraries, whether it being JavaScript framework, for instance, or CSS libraries like Bootstrap or Skeleton or something like that. Right, CDNJS.com, that's one of them, or JSDeliver.com. They're two open source CDNs. They have roughly the same content, pretty much exactly, actually. And that's almost 2,000 libraries and everything we need. Like Bower has like 35,000, you know, but there's a lot of small little things that you probably don't need. And the same goes with NPM, except it's a way higher number. Right? So there's a lot of noise. So what if we can use the power of those CDNs, which have nodes all around the world, so that I can just right-click, say add client-side library, search for jQuery, see exactly what the files are. Notice how it automatically just says, oh, you probably just want that min file, okay? And do you want to place the files in their own folder? Like here says jQuery. No, I'm good. Install. Boom. Done. The end. Okay? Yeah. So what I just did was the equivalent of going to jQuery.com and downloading the zip and putting it in my project. I just did it a lot faster. Okay? What it doesn't give me is a way to update jQuery whenever a new version comes out. Well, we can fix that too. I can go in here. We can do the same thing again. jQuery. All right, we can say save manifest file. So this is probably what you want to do in most cases, I think. And that gives us, this is called Project Pacman, so that's why it's called pacman.json. Okay, this is now our manifest file. Here's what it says. Where do we want it to be located? In here. What is the version of the jQuery package? 3.10, okay, or 3.10. And what are the files that we want? Of course, you get full IntelliSense for what files are available, obviously, right? You get full IntelliSense for everything. What version do you want? And so on. So that's kind of nice. That means that I don't have to check in my packages. Like in NuGet, when we did that for WebForms or MVC apps, we would usually always check in jQuery or like any client-side content that came with NuGet. We can still do that if we want to. There's absolutely nothing prevents us from doing that, but I don't have to if I don't want to, okay? Because if I just save this file, it's back. It's so fast that it's ridiculous. Or if I right-click this file, I can just say restore packages, and boom, it's back, right? This also works offline. So if I've used a package before, it works offline. Like none of the three main package managers that we use, NuGet, NPM, and Bower, works completely offline, which is weird because they have a cache on your local machine. But they have to like check for whether or not there's a new version, or I don't know. But try it on your machine. It doesn't work if you unplug your connection. So this works completely offline, but it solves another very common problem. In your company, you might have a set of, let's say, JavaScript and CSS frameworks or files. Could be developed in-house, or it could be like vetted versions of specific frameworks that you are allowed to use. And they're on some share on some server somewhere, and those are the things that you want to use. Now, if you use NPM and Bower, you could set up a local registry, which requires a lot of work, and you have to know what you're doing and all these sort of things for doing that. Or we could do something like this. We say, you know, of course I get IntelliSense for the packages here, but I'm going to make up one. My company. Okay? And so my company, and I want the path to be www/lib and URLs. Okay, this is different. Any URL, including like UNC shares or whatnot. So I have one file here called knockout.js on the root of my C drive. Save the file. Here's knockout.js, okay? So I can have multiple of these. So I don't have to use a package manager. Like I can just use the local files and have this system handle everything for me. So it really solves a lot of problems here in one go, okay? So this is Project Pacman, and it's sort of a prototype we're playing with. I really want to build this into Visual Studio, right? It's a matter of time, hopefully, it will get it in there. Does this make sense? Is this a good feature, you think? Okay. Awesome. This just solves a lot of problems. It removes headaches. It's all these tiny paper cuts, right? It gets rid of them. Okay. So let's also, now that we have a little extra time here, or not extra time, now that we have more time, we can go in here and say, let's install Bootstrap. So Bootstrap, and you know, just for the sake of, let's just take all of it and always place them in their own file because Bootstrap has a lot of stuff. Install. Boom. Done. Okay, Bootstrap. Done. We've just installed Bootstrap. So now I have the CSS files. I have all the font files and whatnot. Okay? So a lot of you probably work with Bootstrap. I love Bootstrap, a lot of people do. So let's see if we can make that easier now that we have Bootstrap in our project. So let's go to our layout file here, any HTML file. So one thing we'll do is, check this out. We give you Bootstrap snippets. So if you're a visual person, we have the toolbox pre-filled with all the various different things that Bootstrap can do in a very easy and affordable way to work with Bootstrap, right? So we can go in here and we can just say, okay, I want, give me the form. And now we have a Bootstrap form created for us. Yeah. So that's cool. That's really cool if you have the toolbox open. Not everyone uses the toolbox, right? That's fine. So it would be really cool then if I could say Bootstrap, and then we get the exact same experience right here, right? So it works for visual people and for people that likes to be in the code. Yes. So there are more to Bootstrap than, of course, creating, having snippets and skeletons and all this sort of stuff. We have something that we use all the time, whether you use Bootstrap or you use other libraries that can do sort of similar things, which is working with glyph icons, right? So icon fonts. So Bootstrap 3 ships with one. There's Font Awesome, Ionicons. Like the list is very long for simple fonts. So what if I go in here? Let's do an I class. Oh, actually, let's do glyph icon like this. Okay, so now I have my glyph icon. I guess we're gonna go full screen here. Glyph icon. So info-sign, that's some sort of image that goes on my web page here, but I'm not sure exactly what it looks like. Well, let's just invoke IntelliSense and it will tell us exactly what it looks like, okay? Yeah, that is so sweet. I'm very, very happy with this. This is Ryan Williams that wrote an extension for Visual Studio, one that we recommend, and one that's in the web extension pack as well. So again, this works with Bootstrap. It works with Font Awesome, Ionicons, and you know, I think there's like 7 or 8 libraries out there that this supports. So that's really cool. If Bootstrap is in your project, then this automatically shows up. It doesn't show up if Bootstrap is not in your project, which is kind of nice. So we could reduce the noise. All right. Let's play with some C#. I want to consume an API. I want to consume, you know, whatever REST API, JSON endpoint, could be Twitter's API, so I can send tweets or whatever on behalf of my users or something like that. And so there's a communication that goes back and forth in JSON, right? And from web API or from MVC's point of view, we can do model binding so that we can expect the JSON that is returned into our controller action, we can model bind to a C# type, and that happens automatically for us. But it means that we have to then construct a C# class that looks exactly like the JSON that is coming from Twitter, for instance, okay? So that's really annoying. We have to like do that, and then we do it wrong, and that's kind of annoying. So let's just create a project.cs class here, okay? And I'm gonna just remove this, okay? I'm now gonna create a class based on JSON, and I'm just grabbing some JSON, right? So pretend this is coming from, this is project JSON. Let's pretend that this is coming from an endpoint, right? This is the Twitter API or whatever. So I can just walk in here into my C#, and I copied the JSON file. I just copied that to my clipboard. I say edit, paste special, paste JSON as classes. Boom. And then I just need to call this project, so we know what we're dealing with. Isn't that cool? This is really cool, actually. This is an example of a feature that started as an extension that came out in the Visual Studio 2012 timeframe that got really, really popular and was like, we have to build that in. And so we did that for Visual Studio 2013. So you've actually had this for a long time. Okay? Yeah. It's one of those hidden things. All right. So with that, I'm going to switch back here. So I hope you got some tricks, something that you didn't know already, some extensions you didn't try. Here's what I did, okay? There were actually two extensions that I used. I used the web extension pack that you already saw. If you want to try that package management trick I did, where I said add client-side library, and we didn't need to use any of the node tooling to get jQuery and knockout and all this sort of stuff, try that Pacman package manager, right? It's a proof of concept. It works great, as you just saw it. You can use it. You can totally use it in production. But these are the two things. And this story is going to continue where we are going to have a set of extensions that we're going to recommend you to install for web development purposes. And we do that for a few reasons. One is there are a lot more extensions, there are a lot more features written in extensions than we can do ourselves. Okay? So it fills some gaps in what we just don't have development resources to do. So it's a great addition on top of Visual Studio to use these extensions. Another very good reason for it is we can only update Visual Studio like every 3-4 months whenever there's a new update coming out. Now, the speed of the internet works a lot faster than that, okay? Extensions can be updated from one day to the next. So by doing this, we're always a little bit ahead of the curve if we're working with extensions. So you're going to see that continue as we move into the next version of Visual Studio that is right now in preview, VS 15, as it's called. That trend will continue there. And we'll probably see the extension called Web Essentials, which is included in the Web Extension Pack. We'll probably see that go away, right? This might be the last version of Web Essentials ever, because we're trying to move all the features in. So what I've been doing the last year and a half is to separate Web Essentials out into individual extensions. And that's why we have the Web Extension Pack, so that we can have one install that takes all these smaller extensions and install them. That means you can uninstall the ones you don't want. You don't have a single point of failure, which was sometimes problematic with Web Essentials, right? I do have bugs in my code sometimes, believe it or not. So it's much better that they're in smaller, more isolated extensions for everyone. And so whether or not Web Extension Pack is going to be renamed to Web Essentials, I think that would be kind of a good idea, but I don't know yet. It's still a little bit early. The next version of Visual Studio is not out just yet, right? So we've got some time there. Just to give you a heads up of what how we're thinking about this, and also that we are, in fact, building in features that you've helped give feedback on early through the extension work. And so we are slowly moving all that into Visual Studio as soon as we got time to do it, right? So with that, thank you very much for showing up. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'll be around here to answer any questions, so please come up or raise your hand, and we have a few minutes. Yes, sir. You can also just come up. I think everyone is getting up here. Oh, yeah, TypeScript, auto-generation. Okay, I got a question about, do we auto-generate TypeScript? I have a little trick for that. So while my mic is still on, I'm going to show it. So here we have the employees, right? Oh, sorry. Important little detail. So here I have, this is my model class, right? It's very simple, two strings, a name and a title. I can right-click this, go in here and say create TypeScript IntelliSense file. Yes. Oh, right. And you can do the same with JavaScript. It's just the TypeScript will work better, I think. So you do have that, yeah. That means that you can, if you have a web API call going from TypeScript to your web API, for instance, you can now tell what type is returned in your TypeScript from that AJAX request, right? And you get full IntelliSense for the return type. Really cool. Yes. Sorry. Documentation for Web Extension Pack. There's no documentation for Web Extension Pack itself, other than it lists like the around 20 extensions that it will install for you. and how to uninstall them, how to reset it, and so on. But it doesn't really do much on its own. If you click on any of the individual extensions, you'll see the full documentation for it. So everything I showed, if you just follow, the links on the web extension pack download page to the each individual ones, everything is fully documented. Yeah. No, the gallery page for web extension pack. So the gallery might not be the prettiest place to visit, but so Visual Studio Gallery. Right. So here's the web extension pack. You see here are all the extensions that it wants to install. Here are all the things that it said, oh, these are pretty good. You probably want to install these too, but I'm not going to do it because they're not web specific. Here's what it looks like when it installs things. You can reset it, you can suggest new extensions, so on. That's it. And if you click in on one of these, let's say add new file, right, it will give you documentation, it will show you exactly what's done. Some of them have more features than others, right? So if we take the Markdown editor, it's a full editor that can do a lot of stuff. So here you've got like a lot more documentation, keyboard shortcuts, all sorts of things, right? So it's all there. Specific ASP.NET Core questions, let's do that at the expo hall because we have the members of the team there.
Sorry, I didn't ask that question correctly. Is this specific to ASP.NET
Core? So the question is this specific, what I showed, specific to ASP.NET Core? No. You can use it at web forms, MVC, website projects, ASP.NET Core, Cordova apps, C# console apps if you want to. Yeah. Okay. Pure HTML pages, yep. Can you create the sprites dynamically? Like, is there a CLI tool?
Like 10 product images or whatever to get from somewhere and then.
Right. So the question is, can I generate them dynamically? No, because I don't know where in your HTML you want to put them. I can generate the CSS and the list automatically, which is what's happening, but I don't know where you want to put them in your HTML. So you still have to manually like give them all like a class name or something like that. No. There's no way around that, unfortunately. Build server support. There's build server support for the bundler and for the compiler. They both have an executable that's in the NuGet package that will work. So if we simply just go in here, I'm in an ASP.NET Core. I'm in a core project. So it's done a little bit differently there because in this version of ASP.NET Core, it's not MS Build based. But I could basically click here, and there will be a. There will be a setting here if I'm using an MVC project or a web forms project that says enable run on build. And it basically installs a NuGet package that has a targets file in it that will automatically run that exe. Yeah. And still look for the JSON file. Yeah. Right, so the Project Pacman, the client-side library installer, does that also get the dependencies down? No, it does not. The CDNs do not have any knowledge of dependencies. And so I've been running this with like a small group of I don't know, 500 people or something, for the last 6 months to test it out. I've never once heard them ask for the dependency resolution. So maybe we don't need it, right? Or maybe we need to keep like a separate file next to it, say, okay, we have to then construct our own tree of dependencies somewhere else, because that data does not exist on the CDNs. So for instance, Bootstrap requires jQuery. So you might wonder, why doesn't it work? And then you go to Bootstrap webpage and you see, it requires jQuery, and then you install jQuery. So that's sort of the workaround, I guess. That is the only missing feature. Yeah.
Lossy image compression, assuming that doesn't touch the original image file?
You are assuming wrong. If you do lossy or any image optimization there, it overwrites the file that you right-clicked. It does not generate a second file. I thought about it, but then no one ever asked about it. You're the first one that actually ever mentions it.
Okay.
And that extension was first introduced in Visual Studio 2010. So it's 6 years old.
I see my graphic designer being upset, because they would be particularly looking at it, and I wouldn't notice. But
right, but then they have the original, right? So you just get a new batch of those.
Awesome talk, by the way.
Thank you.
Great job. I don't know why you didn't get more claps and applause. And
right.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Yes. JS.comments.
Yes. Yeah. So do all my developers need the web extension pack to actually see the type?
Excellent question. When I did the js.commons in the JavaScript file, was there a need to do for everyone to have that installed, to have an extension installed for this to work? So basically to understand what this means. No. Visual Studio will understand this on its own. What you need extension for is to get the IntelliSense for it and the auto-completion of sort of the comments and the stars, you know, the asterisks. No, Visual Studio understands this on its own. Yeah. Yeah, can when I showed to require Bootstrap and it has the different folders, can I put them in various different folders? Like, so the CSS goes in the CSS folder and the JavaScript goes in the... No, unfortunately not. Not in the prototype, at least.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.